All right, welcome. I'm just realizing I'm not standing in front of my camera, kind of, mostly. It's Wednesday night, so we're back again. Episode 52
Wednesday,
now, right?
episode 52, and the world is literally on fire, I guess. I don't know if you've
Yeah. I was
looked
gonna ask
outside.
you, I was gonna ask you, did you go outside today?
No, I definitely stayed in.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Looks
I
like a Dune movie out there.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's a little better here now. It's not quite as apocalyptic looking outside, but this afternoon, I went outside and looked up. You could see like the sun, but it was just red. And if you tried to take a picture of it, the camera would just, it couldn't even see it. It just blended it into the sky. So yeah, something else. You know what I found kind of funny? And this just might be me, I don't know, but I didn't know about all these fires in northwestern Ontario. I don't know. Like, it hasn't been on the news. I haven't seen it anywhere. And this morning I'm listening to the news and they're like, oh, there's a air quality alert. And I just figured because it was so humid, right? And then they're like, yeah, the wildfire smoke. And I was like, I had to Google it. I'm like, Ontario wildfire, what? And yeah, there's like, it's not good. It's really bad.
It's crazy. I took a look at the maps and it's like an area a comparable size to Lake Nipigon, like in surface area,
Yeah, it's
which
nuts.
is like a lake that's called, it's called one of the another Great Lake essentially, right?
Is
It's
it?
just north of Superior. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's like 4,000 square kilometers or something like that. It's wild.
Yeah. Did you see the video footage of the CN Rail guys?
No.
Oh my God. Okay, so I hope I'm not messing this story up, but they had evacuated this area, right? And the what are they called? Engineers, I guess, the guys who drive the train. So they're leaving, and I guess the thing that I read was something like there was a foreman that was still back where they were coming from, so they're like, we're going back. And there's insane video footage of a locomotive essentially completely engulfed in flames, and the engineers are in the cab and they are like, you know, videoing it. And I've never seen anything like it.
My God.
My again, I hope I'm not messing this up. They got the guy they went for. The locomotive stopped. It wouldn't work anymore. I guess maybe because of heat or something. So they jumped out, got in, you know, those, I think it's like you see them around here every once in a while. It's like a pickup truck with rails
Like
on
an
it, like
ATV kind
the
of.
wheels on it, so it can ride the rails.
Oh,
And
sure, yeah.
that stopped working. So they ran.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I just pulled up the
Crazy.
video and it's insane. It is
Yeah.
literally surrounded by flames.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you imagine how big that locomotive is, right? Like they're not like a couple feet off the ground. That thing's tall. Yeah. It's scary footage.
Is
Something
crazy.
else. So yeah, I did go for a walk this morning and it was like I was walking in a campfire, just with the amount of smoke. And then it got really sketchy here, like mid-afternoon. And I guess the winds have shifted or something. Seems a little less smoky here now. I don't know what it's like where you are.
Still smoky.
Yeah, something else. So on that fun news, let's talk about the week of, well, AWS and AI stuff. So I don't know, four things from AWS that caught my eye. I don't know if you've got anything additional in what we've been bouncing back and forth. You know the thing that I noticed? I don't think there was
What's
a
up?
single agent core update.
Wow,
Right?
I'm shocked.
Yeah, me too.
Has something gone wrong?
I know, right? What happened? I guess they're going to rename it now. It's going to become Kiro Core. They're just in
I
the
think that's
middle of
literally the
branding.
case.
Yeah,
I did
yeah.
see a news item, and that probably explains why. So,
All right. So the ones that I do have, the first one actually caught me a little bit by surprise. It is about the AWS MCP servers that we also talk about, right? It's a collection of skills and SOPs and a bunch of things. It now supports OAuth, so you can do live logins with AWS and everything, which, yeah, I was actually it makes a lot of sense it was that it's there, but I was kind of surprised that it wasn't there already. I don't use it, so I don't know.
A little shocking. I guess it was. Was it just with AWS creds before then, or what's the difference now?
I guess, right? I don't know.
Maybe you can federate with other services.
Yeah, maybe.
That's kind of handy.
Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense. The thing that got me was, okay, great. So you're making it easier for me to log in to my AWS accounts. Yep. Fantastic. With the giant sort of asterisks on obviously you want to make sure that you know what permissions that agent has now that it's easier to give it access to your AWS account, because how many times have we been on the show here and it's like, oops, I deleted my production database and that kind of stuff. So you obviously want to tread very lightly here, but it is, I got to say, super handy for troubleshooting and log analysis and stuff to have an agent that can access your account and do that grunt work for you.
Totally. Especially if you can just give it read-only access and let it run, it's extremely useful.
Yeah.
Because it'll go and it'll spider through your logs, right?
Yeah. That's what I do. I've got a read-only setup that my agents can use, and I can just say, hey, you know, go check this Lambda function. It's not working. And it just churns away as I am doing something else and then comes back and says, here's what I found. So very helpful stuff. So this is cool, but tread carefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like 95% of the DevOps agent in a nutshell is that functionality.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. Yeah. Like it, for me, it's kind of one of those things that once you're comfortable, allowing an agent to do that type of stuff on your behalf, it's like, I don't really hear a lot of people talking about it. I see a lot of YouTube videos on how to make $1,000 a day with your completely automated marketing
your
AI
Etsy
agent.
Shop,
yeah,
t-shirt
like
factory.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's cool stuff. I get it. It gets clicks and stuff. But this is the real stuff. This is the thing that could really help you be more efficient. Maybe would that be the right word? Right. I guess. Yeah.
Efficient, effective. Yeah. Like you can parallelize tasks a lot easier now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead of having to invest time in writing scripts to do that work, you know.
Yeah, I'm always amazed now when I'm watching these agents and they're plugging away, and it's just like, oh, I'm going to write a script for this. I'm going to write a script for that. And it's just the other day I saw it making TypeScript, and I'm like, well, okay, well, whatever works, man. Just go get it done. Right? It reminds me of what's that?
You don't have to care, right? Like,
no.
As long as it compiles or runs properly and doesn't leak anything.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. It reminds me of an old Tom Cruise movie, We Are an Efficient Team. Do you know the reference?
No, what's that?
Oblivion. I think it's Oblivion, where he's on the planet and he he has to fly around like surveying the planet for some reason. I can't remember why. And he's like on a, like a, I don't want to call it a space station, but he's above the Earth, and it's him and a woman, and they're communicating with their bosses, and they're always asking him, you know, are you still an efficient team? And they're like, we're an efficient team. He flies around the planet, and she sort of monitors it from their little floating spacey station thing. It's a good movie, actually. I'm pretty sure it's called Oblivion.
Okay. Yeah. This came out in 2013. I totally missed this one.
It's, if you haven't seen it, it's worth a watch. And I bet you at some point you will get the Tom Cruise run, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got
indeed.
It. Yeah. It's just like slicing the air like Terminator back in the day. Okay. Yeah. So we've digressed, or I've digressed. So that's the first thing. I think that's pretty good. I'm going to make myself another note here. Give me 1 second. Just to jog my memory on something I want to bring up later. What's next? We talked last week about Sol, Terra, Luna, and what is that?
Oh,
like 5.6, GPT-5.6 or whatever it is.
Yep,
now available on Bedrock.
That was fast, but not surprising.
Yep. I actually meant to write down when this announcement came out. It was within a week of OpenAI's release that, hey, blunk, there we go. You can get it on Bedrock. So that doesn't surprise me at all. I think I also saw that it's available in Kiro as well now. If you're using the Kiro, is there a difference between the CLI and the IDE? I don't know, to be honest. But I saw somebody, probably in a LinkedIn video or something, talking about that those OpenAI models were available in Kiro now too. So didn't take long at all.
Probably not that big a difference, really. But yeah, available in Bedrock. I mean, these labs are so integrated to the hyperscalers now. I guess it's not surprising at all anymore.
Yeah. And you know what? I was thinking about this the other day. It actually, like, I understand why you have to be there, right? Because this is where people are building stuff, and you know,
this is where businesses access this stuff, right?
Yeah. Like, right. It makes a lot of sense.
Or their Azure accounts.
Yeah. The other thing I thought of, though, like as a somebody who has like a subscription, I'm starting to integrate these tools into the personal projects and stuff like that you and I talk about. And it probably makes a lot more economical sense for these companies as well, because I'm not paying a flat rate for that. I'm paying per transaction or whatever you want to call it. So I bet you that is much better for their bottom line too, that if I'm using it like that versus, let's say, my Cloud Max plan or something like that.
Oh, 100% guaranteed. Yeah. Like, there's no doubt. Like, I'm sure they would much rather have you pay the API fees through Bedrock, despite AWS getting their cut, right?
Yeah.
It's probably still orders of magnitude more profitable than the subscription plans, right?
Yeah. Like, absolutely. Those subscription plans are like a double-edged sword, right? Because I'm really used to my Cloud Max plan now, but GLM 5.2 is just a beast. But I really have a hard time when I hit enter and I watch the little dollars click away at the bottom there. And I'm like, but I could do this for flat fee, basically, inside my Cloud account. It's amazing how quickly you get trained to be like, oh, should I be paying per transaction, or should I use my Cloud subscription over here? It's interesting.
Well, you know, while you have it, you should probably use the subscription, right? But you know, it's gonna suck when it goes away. If it goes, okay.
I don't see how it could go away. Do you think it'll go away? I don't think it'll go away.
Is the PR hit and the customer base loss worth it to these companies right now? You know,
maybe
lose every developer.
Oh yeah, they'd all go, right? Like, I've talked to friends about it, and they're like, okay, I'm willing to pay $140 a month. This thing is a beast. It can do anything that I need it to do. But like, if you imagine what your true costs would be for we've talked about the amount of tokens I burn in a day, right? We looked at that little Codex Bar app and stuff. Like, it's economically would not make sense for me to do it anymore. I would have to move to an open weighted model or go back to the old way of doing things. So I know there's a lot of like FUD and stuff around, these things are going to go away. They've got you addicted. Like, if it went to $200, okay. But the amount of tokens that I use, it's a no brainer. I'd stop immediately.
Well, the thing is, like, the way these prices change is it gets cheaper for them over time to spin up more inference at the same intelligence tier, right? So they can spin up more Fable, more GPT 5.6, and then they can serve more of that and they make more over time, right? Like, the economies of scale get better.
Yeah.
It costs them more to do these training runs for these exponentially bigger models, right? Yeah. And that's where they're spending all this money. So I can see that, at some point we might see like a pause, and then they just serve inference when the models are good enough to like the general public, and you can get those on your subscription. And they might do something like Anthropic did with Fable and bump the new stuff to internal or a select list of business customers, or who knows, right? Who knows what the government will get into at that point?
Yeah, until somebody leapfrogs ahead of them, and then the Fable, just using Fable as the example, then Fable becomes available in your subscription because Fable 6 is out, and that one you got to pay for. But this is old stuff, right? It's like the fact that you see the stealth bombers at the air shows because they have stuff way better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll fly that around because, you know, that's last year's news. So you can look. Yeah, it's funny. You reminded me of something else there as you said that, and I, damn, My brain's a little shot today. Okay, if it pops back, I'll mention it. This is cool. Amazon Guard Duty now has AI protection built in.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah. This is good.
This is good. Yeah, it works with Bedrock and SageMaker. At least that's what was in the news release. It's just like any of the other protection plans that exist for Guard Duty right now. Not enabled by default. You can turn it on. I did this in my account, so like I have the centralized, what do they call it, delegated administrator set up in an account for my security tools and all that kind of stuff. So I went in there and I didn't enable it for all of my accounts because I don't need it in all my accounts, but I did turn it on for, you know, the project accounts that I'm using and stuff like that where I'm running Bedrock. So it'll be interesting to see what it does. You get 30 days free and then it goes to like any other one, you have to pay for it. So pretty interesting.
Well, it's like, what a fun threat vector we have to think about now. Like if your account gets compromised, you leak your credentials, now someone can spin up a Fable agent in your account and tell it to like, hey, go and get all of our production data and export it to this place for DR purposes, quote unquote.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
They got to think about that. And you're going to get billed for it.
and you got to pay for the tokens that they're using to steal your shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double-edged sword there. It's like you get cut twice. Ugh. You just reminded me of what it was. Have you been using Fable?
I have been using Fable.
They extended it, right, till the 19th? Yep. I don't know. I've been having problems with it. I don't know if I maybe just need to close my consoles down and, you know, restart them all. But I was telling you last week that I set up the advisor feature in Cloud Code. So I'm using Opus 4.8 and then it's like, you know, it'll make the advisor call when it thinks it needs more help. And I happened just to notice that I was watching it while it was working on something and I see it, hey, we're going to call the advisor. And then there was some sort of error. And I didn't really think anything of it. It said something. I just figured, oh, maybe Fable is down. Maybe it's getting throttled. Who knows, right? And then it did it again. It did it again. And when it was finally done working, I went back and I asked it. I'm like, hey, I've got this feature set up and it doesn't seem to work. Has it ever worked? And it's like, nope. So, yeah. It didn't try to make something up or sugarcoat it or anything like that. It was pretty much, nope, it's never worked. I wonder if it's the advisor feature. You know, if I just changed my model, tried it, and then flipped back to a different model, I didn't actually think of doing that. But it's been working for you, no problem?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't used the advisor feature, but like I said, what I've been doing is I've essentially got it delegating to Codex on certain tasks. Yeah. So I haven't had any issues with that.
Okay.
And it's been pretty okay. I mean, it does burn through usage if you're not delegating to other things, I've noticed. It's been solid for me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm using CMUX and I'm using something else that I'll tell you about their recommendation section. And it's kind of looks like my browser now. It's just like all sorts of tabs. And I'm like, I'm reluctant to close those tabs. Ooh. So I guess I'm CMUX just going to have to bite the bullet and kill it and start again. Just maybe there's something.
CMUX is so tantalizing.
Yeah. I enjoy it. Although I'm going to save my recommendation. I'll save my recommendation to the end. I'm stealing my own content. Last thing that I saw in the AWS news, I think you shared this actually, Loom for AWS.
So this is a new service it's an open source reference platform for governing AI agents, it looks like. So this is where your agent core news went this week.
See. I get it now. Into the Loom. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you get? Essentially, it's a control plane with RBAC and ownership and like an agent registry section, human approval panel, that kind of thing.
So. Built on strands, which I've been using for in agent core already. You know, this is so on brand for AWS, right? Like they come out, they give us all these primitives, right? And let us go and piece them together like Lego bricks and build your stuff. And then they're like, look at this. You don't have to think about that anymore, right? You can let, in this case, Loom do that for you. So it's the way I thought of it is just it's a layer on top of those primitives to help you essentially build, deploy, and manage those solutions, those agents and stuff like that. So pretty interesting. You know, it does say enterprise grade. So do I envision myself using it? Probably not. Plus, for me, it sort of takes, let's be honest, it sort of takes some of the fun and the learning out of this by putting I'm going to call it a wrapper around it. I kind of, the other thing that I thought about this is like, hey, there's nothing wrong with simplifying these tools, but there's a lot of unknowns in these things already. Like, you know, talking to customers this week, they're like, well, how, when I ask it, like when I put this query in, how does it get the answer? And I'm like, it's magic, man. I don't know. Like it's
like, there's numbers in the box and the numbers align in such a way that if you ask it this thing, it'll go and get you the thing.
Potentially. Like how does your human brain just recall something? I don't know. Like it's mysterious, but it works. And I think, you know, my thought why I'm mentioning that is you put a wrapper around something that's already slightly mysterious. You're adding an additional layer of, to stay on theme, mystery to it. And abstraction is great, right? We've been abstracting computer technology for decades now. I just wonder if maybe this is too soon, like to wrap another, to put an abstraction layer on top of something that's already very abstract and challenging for people to wrap their heads around. Nothing wrong with it. I just wonder if it's maybe too soon.
Maybe. I mean, this is going to be like your enterprise version, your control tower for this stuff, right? Yeah. So this is like probably some corporation, some multinational has some compliance requirements around this sort of thing and they want to implement it at scale or whatnot.
Yeah.
But like, if you're, as long as you're exposing the right things, like we've talked about, there's a lot of plumbing that goes into getting this stuff working properly, right? It's a lot of boring, just kind of orchestration work. And like, do you want to be the one to write the context system, the memory database, that kind of thing? And maybe you do, and that's fine. But it's like, what do you want to expose to customers? I can see it from that point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. If I put my cynical hat on, this is also a way to increase spending because it makes makes it easier to use. Therefore, easy to use means probably consume more. Therefore, we can actually... start generating some real dollars on AI workloads, maybe. I know that's overly cynical, but that was another thing that kind of popped into my head is make it easier to use, therefore increase spending.
Oh, yeah. If I made AWS, I want as many people spinning up agents as possible right now.
Oh, basically. Yeah. Absolutely, right? You gotta justify those massive dollars of investment.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. 200 billion doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. You need a lot of tokens to generate that back to break even. Right. Yep. Yeah. I'm not even burning that many tokens on my Cloud Max plan.
Getting close though.
Getting close. Working on it. I'm token maxing. I'm going to get my $140 worth. all right. Did you happen to have anything that I've missed on the AWS news side that you want to mention?
Let's see. No, I think we pretty much covered it. Okay. GuardDuty, GPT 5.6, Loom, and MCP. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, personal project. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I can go first.
Fire away.
I built a little agent in Agent Core for my movie bot in Discord. Oh,
nice.
So
what's it do?
So we have this problem where people there's like a voting system, right? So you cast your votes for the week and then on Sunday or Saturday or whatnot, it fires and tabulates all the votes together. The problem with that is not everyone is as consistent as maybe they should be with the titles.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
and there's a lot of, let's say creative license taken with the movie titles when people vote. There's a big parsing problem when I go to pick all that out and then try to find what movie people are actually talking about. so, So I just hooked up like an agent to go and like what movies could this possibly be, and yeah. then make TMDB searches for those movies. And if you find one that matches and it comes up, suggest that as an option. Like, did you mean Sweet. This movie? Yeah, it's been like it's the kind of like a perfect fuzzy search thing that lines up perfectly with an LLM.
I love that. Like this is the thing that you and I have talked about for me that's really kind of made this hit home. I was, you know, even late last year, sort of end of 2025, I was very skeptical about this. Like I was very much on the fence and you know, with the podcast and just kind of looking at articles and that five levels thing that I talk about all the time, probably sick of hearing about it now, that made it really jive for me, like really kind of be like, oh, I get it now. And that is another example of just a personalized little piece of software. It does what you want. It makes your life easier. And I can only imagine that your bedrock bill is, you know, you're gonna have to take a second mortgage or something for all the horsepower that you're using, right? Like, you know, if it hits a buck, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, no, and like the Nova models will do it just fine. So
you just took my next question. You're using one of the Amazon Nova models, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like you can another like kind of just like. The idea of use the right model for the right job, right? Like, what are you actually trying to get out of this text generation thing?
Yeah.
I'm looking for titles that already exist in the data set corpus, probably, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you don't need Opus 4.8 to do that.
Claude might shame me if I try to do that. I think.
You hear it kind of laughing in the background. Is this all you got? Oh, that's really cool. So you basically have a Discord bot that's making API calls through Agent Core to suggest the title. Did you mean this?
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, like, yeah. So the request comes. It's just a simple like the bot has like an API gateway and it goes to Lambda. Request comes in. If there is some ambiguity in the movies, like if it misses the hit on the database and it's not in cache or anything, fire it off to the agent, see if it can find anything.
Yeah, very cool. Good. Very cool. Anything else on the personal project side?
I am still totally obsessed with this Pokemon TCG thing. I cannot get it out of my brain.
remind me again what this is, but I forget.
So there's a Kaggle competition right now, and Kaggle's like a data science platform, a learning platform. But what's happened is the Pokemon company has set up a competition where they've exposed, essentially, they've provided you with a runtime, an engine for the Pokemon trading card game, and a set of cards that are legal. And then they've said, essentially, have at it, try to create pilots for decks in this metagame that are good, like try and top the leaderboard.
Yeah.
And there's like a 4,000 players, essentially, and you can rise and fall depending on your performance.
So oh, nice.
Obsessed with that. I peaked at second place.
No way.
And yeah. And then the meta shifted and I don't know where I think I'm like 100 and something now.
That's pretty good, man. That's awesome. Very cool.
But I'm at the point where I've got a codex session running with a goal that is essentially to create an engine that is observable that I can pull the data and reuse seeds from to run ML algos on to try and mine as much as I can from this data set. What's winning? What's losing?
Oh my God, that is fantastic. What I hear outside of being very cool is very much like myself, you need a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my hobby.
That's what I would argue too. Some people may disagree, but that's really cool. That's really cool. All right. So on my front, if you remember, I think it was last week, I mentioned that we were just joking about the cost of bedrock, that my bedrock bill had gone up significantly for OpenBrain. I think it went up to like $28 or something. And just for context context, it was like hovering around a dollar before that.
Yeah.
It was, so like it's, like that's a
2500X.
Oh yeah. It's orders of magnitude larger. Right. And the only thing I could think of was that dream cycle, that synthesizer thing, that was new And I was like, well, maybe it's that, right? Turns out it wasn't. And this goes back to what we were talking about before. The first thing that I did was I had remembered reading an article that you could tag the Lambda functions that are essentially making the API calls to Bedrock to help identify essentially what is using, like what's generating all the tokens essentially. And it turns out that it's not the synthesizer directly. It's there's a, another little piece of that, that what it does is it goes through the memories and it tries to, well, very similar to kind of what you were doing with the movie thing, right? It looks at an episodic memory and says, I think this is for project X, or I think this is for project Y. And then depending on how confident it feels on that, it just says, yep, that's project X, or it could be, but I better ask a human to tell me. That part was actually messing up. So what was happening is it would come to life. It wasn't actually even ever generating the new, I still hate the state of play thing that it came up with, but I haven't changed it. I talk about it every week, and every time I go to say it out loud, I'm like, ugh, that's horrible. It worked a couple times and then stopped. So I wasn't actually ever getting sort of updated dreams or memories in the Kanban. No.
Distilling anything out of the insides.
No, it wasn't, because what it was doing is, as it was trying to grab the new episodic memories and categorize them by project, it was failing. And it was failing because, believe it or not, it was the Lambda function was timing out. Oh, look, I've got my, I stop pointing at the screen, that my Mac is deciding that I'm using hand gestures for something. What was happening is, because the Lambda function was timing out, and I didn't know, because I didn't set up a DLQ or anything. So, like we were talking about before, I basically, Claude has read-only access to my OpenBrain account, and I said, I don't understand why this bill is this much money. Go figure it out. And it started churning away and churning away. I burnt a lot of tokens. And it was testing things and trying things. And finally it came back and it's like, I think I found it. This is what I believe it is. It took 3 nights to fix it. That's on me because I didn't want to force it to run. I wanted it to just use the jobs and work away on it. So long story short, it figured out what was happening. It was, I wrote this down and I forget now. I put it in my in OpenBrain, all right, but I can't recall now. It was something with every project has, when it decides on a new project, or I tell it to create a project, it creates a UUID for that project. And it was something about the way the function was trying to parse those UUIDs that it was getting back. So it was actually talking to Bedrock, and Bedrock was giving it information back, but it was incorrectly parsing the UUIDs, timing out, and it, because it's an asynchronous Lambda function, I think by default it tries it 3 times. So you can imagine all of the tokens it's generating, but never actually updating in the database these project codes as it's finding them, or as it's deciding on new ones, or as I tell it to do something. So it fixed it. Took 3 nights, trial and error. We thought it had a solution, didn't work, tried it again, tried something else. This is what I love about how it just kind of, all these tools are like this, right? It's just like, okay, this is what I think it is. Here's my test. We're going to see what it does. Oops, it didn't work. Let's go again, try it this way next time. And it just kept iterating on it. And it took 3 nights and it got it. And my bill went back down to about, I think it's about, oh man, like 2-3 cents a day now. So we're back in territory of, like, you know, a couple bucks a month kind of thing on Bedrock. And it actually now is doing those memory synthesization, or whatever you want to call it. So pretty interesting. It was it was neat to watch Claude kind of working through it and digging through all the logs and trying to find in Lambda where it wasn't working, and it finally got it. So yeah, that's a big cross off the list for the week.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I guess that begs the question, like, have you noticed any, like, when it, how long has that been up and running for now? And have you noticed any benefits or any changes or any useful, has it actually been useful or?
Well, okay. So that's a really good follow-up question. No. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So increasingly, I'd love to know if you're doing this too, or you're seeing this too. Mm. Increasingly, I am not using UIs anymore. So I built the Kanban because that's what I was used to doing that in Jira, right? So
right, yeah.
I drag the cards around, put my notes in, blah, 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 right? And the Kanban that I bought has an MCP. So what I've increasingly found was, or is, that I just talk to the agent and I say, there's a card for this, right?
Yep.
I talk to Travers. Like if it's something that is assigned to me, right? An agent can't do that. I talk to Travers. Right. Here's the update. We fixed it. Close the ticket. And it just closes the ticket. Well, that's an episodic memory for Project X. And yes, we will get that new dream cycle overnight, but I'm not in the Kanban board anymore looking at the tickets. The agents might be, right? But I'm not.
Yep.
So actually today I put that as sort of, I used the grill me skill that we've talked about.
Oh, yeah.
That we've both been using to try to figure out, and I didn't finish it. It's actually one of those tabs in CMUX, to try to figure out, like, there's value there still, but how do I consume that if I'm pretty much just chatting with an agent or using the Kanban CLI to update those things? I'm not going in there anymore. So,
well, you know what that sounds like? It sounds like it's maybe not for you anymore. It's for whatever agent is accessing that ticket. Extra context.
I think that's what it comes down to is it's giving that agent, it's not having to look at individual memories. It can basically say, you know, this is a project I should have. The project's been around for a while, so I should have a rolled up summary of what's happened in that project. It only has to read that versus jamming through each individual episodic memory, which could be a fair number of them, depending on how long that project's been around.
Could be, and who knows how useful any of those are, like how much signal is in any given one, right? Like,
yeah.
That example you gave, like just close this ticket, is not maybe super necessarily useful for an agent. I mean,
no.
But, you know, if there's a lesson that you can learn from the work that was done, then that's a different story.
Yeah. Well, actually, those Kanban actions, that's a good point that you brought up. We wrote in there that the types of memories that it ignores every time are Kanban related. Mm. Like just,
okay.
Like so if I, yeah, if, yeah, it knows that those are coming from the Kanban CLI or the Kanban MCP. And when it's doing its summaries, it'll ignore those because they're exactly that. Move it from to do to in progress, move it to block to whatever. Like it's just,
yeah,
it's no value in any of those. Story. Right. Yeah. So, That was a good one. I'm going to watch it for a couple more days, make sure it stays, pennies, and just make sure that it's been fixed. But I think it's done. But that's the one thing. The other thing, okay. So I watched this video a while ago, and it's
okay.
I'll share it in the notes after we're done when I publish it, the show notes. It's something called I want to say it's called A Love Letter to Pi. I might have mentioned it before. It's a YouTube video, and the guy talks about the Pi agent. And one of the interesting things that he does is when he's working with the agent, he asks it, instead of giving him markdown files for things, he asks it to create HTML documents, nicely stylized HTML documents, screenshots, all this kind of stuff. So I got the idea from that. I'm like, what if I could build a skill that would summarize that session and give it to me in an HTML doc rather than markdown. So I built with Claude's help, I call it the retro skill, right? And what it does is as I'm finishing up my session, I can say, hey, run the retro skill. It looks at all the information in the session and tells me what worked well, what didn't work well, and provides suggestions on the things that didn't work well on how to make it better the next time. It'll say, hey, you know what? I tried to do this and it took us four attempts. And here's why it took four attempts for that to work, because the agent had to go and make extra calls or write a script or whatever. And then it gives you a little blurb on how to fix it. It's been pretty slick. It's been suggesting like memory updates. It's been suggesting small changes to markdown files that define my skills and stuff like that. Scripts like tools and stuff like that, that it could create. So pretty, pretty cool. Actually, I've only been running it for, I don't know, maybe a week now. But yeah, it works really well. I'm happy with it. Happy with it so far.
That's pretty sweet. Like a little self-improvement kind of loop you can get into for your setup. I like that idea. Yeah. I'm going to steal it.
Yeah.
I'm stealing
I'll send you the markdown if you want it, and you can task your agent with making it better. Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. And you know what? As much as I like markdown, man, the HTML is just so much nicer to look at.
Websites are way better for human sharing, knowledge sharing, I found, for as well. Yeah. Like, if I'm just stuffing stuff in a data store to remember later or like across, markdown is great. But if I need to actually demo something or show something to a coworker or a collaborator, like, can't beat HTML.
Yeah. I'm doing HTML now. I did like a handover doc for a customer in HTML. Used to do them in markdown, and I think it was actually this video that sort of made me think, you know, that's a way nicer way to look at something. And just tonight, before we got on the show here, I was working on one, and it did a really good job. But I'm like, you know, it would be really nice if this was branded for the customer. So I'm I'm just going to try it. So I go into Claude and I'm like, okay, here's the website. It's Acme Widgets, right? What you created for me is perfect. I don't want you to change the text. I don't want you to muck with it at all, but I want it to be on brand for that customer. So go look at their website, grab like typeface, grab colors, you decide on what that brand looks like. And then I want you to create a version 2 of this that's branded. I wandered away and I forgot that I had given it with Chrome. There's like a Claude plugin now for Chrome.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I like kind of freaked out a little bit when I came back to my desk, went and had dinner, right? I'm like, oh, I got to do some more reading and stuff. Came back and Chrome's up and it's like click, 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 click.
Browser moving.
Yeah. It's like, and I'm like, what is going on? And then all of a sudden my brain was like, oh, that's Claude. So I pulled up the little CLI and sure enough, you can see Claude doing things, do this in Chrome, do. And it's just, and it's, it grabbed the logo, colors, typefaces, even like how the customer had like, you know, H1 versus H2 and stuff on their pages, like the different sizing. And I'm like,
oh, it matched their website formatting too.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it's from their website. And I'm like, oh, this is perfect. So I flipped it to them before the show started and I'll get some feedback tomorrow. But yeah, you're right. HTML is just way nicer for humans. Way nicer.
Yeah. It's just easier to read. That's so funny. I mean, we're going to talk about this in another news item, but as long as it's scoped to one website, that's probably fine, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I could totally see like the benefit of giving a reporter a deliverable, like that kind of like consultant polish or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Automatically. That's so nice.
Yeah. Somebody that I chat to in a Discord channel, that we were talking about this. I shared the little retro, a snippet from the retro skill. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. I've started doing something similar, HTML, PDF, everything branded for the customer. And I flipped that to them. The one time he said, what did he say? That the customer marked up the PDF, like I guess they had printed it and made their own notes on it, taken a picture of it and sent it back, and he fed that into Claude, and Claude picked up the handwritten notes and basically adjusted based on what the customer's feedback was. So pretty slick. I wonder if Claude could read my handwriting. I bet you it couldn't. It's that bad.
I think we're in the same boat. I don't think.
Oh my god!
I don't think mine's legible.
Yeah. And do people younger than us even know how to like not know how to write? That's not. But cursive is gone, right?
But in cursive, Probably not. They're bringing it back because of the push to ban phones and laptops in schools more and more.
So, so they're making them learn cursive again.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised, because you have to, the only way you can guarantee that you're not cheating on an essay or something with an agent is just to write it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's funny you say that. Did you see the news article? It was it Brown University, I think, in the States? The professor, professor did a take home midterm, and the scores were like 90s, right? Like every student got 90s, and he's like, "Oh, this is a little weird." So he did in person final, and there were a couple outliers. Like one kid got 95 on the midterm, and then got 96 on the final, but everybody else was like 95 and like 40 on the final. And they said on the news, I was listening to on the news, and they're like, they even had like a bunch of people drop out of the class.
That's wild. I mean, you're just cheating yourself at that point.
You're just like, cheating yourself. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy.
It's definitely good to know how to have AI help you, but to have AI do all of your schoolwork for you, I would have to think in the long term, you are setting yourself up for failure, I would think.
Hugely. I mean, it's like, if you want to learn something, even like taking a test or prepping for a test is part of a learning process, right? Like you're giving yourself flashcards, you're going and doing practice problems, or you should be anyways. Like, and if you don't do that, you're denying yourself learning whatever it is you're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a good story. Okay, two other things really quickly. You mentioned your movie app. Did you also see the news article that Netflix is potentially buying Letterboxd?
I didn't see this.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, just as long as they don't inshittify it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly the only places that I can find the streaming services where those movies are, all the other ones go away. It's just Netflix now. Right? They don't show you that I can watch it on Prime or whatever. It's, those just mysteriously go away. So there's that. And then, the one last thing I wanted to say about personal projects. I've been playing around with Pi a fair amount. And one of the things that I absolutely love about Pi is it doesn't really have skills, right? It has extensions. And this thing is like, I'm using GLM 5.2. And we were talking a couple weeks ago about how I'm using service accounts and 1Password now to basically get my agents access to GitLab, to AWS and stuff like that. So I have a skill in Claude for that. And I was like, well, I want to use Pi. How am I going to do that? So I just went into Pi and I'm like, go look at this skill and create an extension for yourself, because you need to be able to do the same thing. And it's like, yep, it went and wrote a TypeScript extension. I did the old slash reload and I'm like, okay, go read about the work items that are open for OpenBrain or whatever, and there it goes. Went to 1Pass, got its service account, logged in, and grabbed the tokens that it needed, and didn't publish them the tokens in its thought process. So perfect.
That's a win. Pi's a beast, man. Like I it's my go-to now for the most part. Like
it's
unlike except for Claude, because I have to use Claude Code, but
yeah, it's increasingly becoming. I'm generally running Pi as well as Claude. Like I might task Pi, same idea. Like maybe Claude is doing the issues or the work items. Like it's kind of logicking through what we need to do. But then I might use something like GLM 5.2 and Pi to actually do the programming work. Right?
Yeah.
Because honestly, I don't need Opus 4.8 to write CloudFormation scripts or Lambda functions, right?
No. Like,
GLM's going to do a good job at that.
Yeah, we were good to do that with like 4.5 or whatnot, right? Like it's
It's been good. All right, let's see. Gen AI news. Oh, the first one, that GLM 5.2. Did you see the one about, I think it was somewhere in the UK using GLM 5.2 to essentially do bookkeeping, VAT, which I guess our equivalent would be HST, right? So tax work. Yeah. The first thing that I got, I'm like, holy crap, they get charged like 2000. It's not euros anymore, is it? Pounds, because they got rid of the euros.
Still so pounds for them. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. So 2000 pounds to file a VAT return. I'm like, holy crap. But
that's crazy.
Yeah, like pretty amazing that it said it was able to do those returns using GLM5. And what did they say? Like, it did a really good job, maybe out like, what, 6 pence or something like that? It's
like, yeah, like 6 or 7 pence.
Yeah, like so, nothing, right? A human, pretty good. A human, I mean, could muck that up 6 cents, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you miss a round or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, how much did it cost? It cost like, it was like 70 minutes and it cost like $3?
$3, yeah, it's just under $3. So if you do the math on that, and they're saying that, you know, some small businesses in the UK would spend anywhere, what, $15 to $2,000 a quarter to file those returns, like have a bookkeeper and accountant do it. I've said a lot of times, for most people, this is just a math problem. And you look at that, you're like, for $3 versus $2,000 or $1,500, it's a no-brainer, I think.
It certainly sounds like a no-brainer, but I think there's like if you keep reading, you can see why maybe you wouldn't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
Want to do it.
There's some sketchy stuff, and that was the note that I made to myself. Like on a math equation, it seems like a no-brainer, but then the note that I made to myself would I trust an AI tool to fill out any CRA related paperwork for me or my business? No, right? But no. I think the idea of that article was just, at least what I took from it, is just to demonstrate how these tools continue to become more and more capable. And you can see how these types of professions, at risk is too dramatic, but you know, when it gets to a point where it's cost effective and reliable, it's gonna be tough. Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting. I mean, it's like, you can't, so the LLMs as they are, with the harnesses we have, you can't trust to be 100% reliable time after time with the same inputs, right? Which is a non-starter for accounting work, where if you get it wrong, the downside is a huge fine and your business is gone, right?
Yeah.
But where this probably goes is like, okay, here's the info model. Go hit this API or this MCP server that points to an accounting API specifically set up for your tax situation, and get the output, and then get me the report, and then I'll go to the website that I sent the request to, and I'll go and check and see, does this look right? Can I just send this to an accountant to give it a once over, review it, make sure it looks good? And then you probably cut down the process by a huge margin, I imagine.
Yeah. Even just the time it might take, right? Like to have that first cut done by that, and then you're just verifying it rather than having to do all of the work yourself. There's probably even value in that, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Now, there's the question of, do you want to send your income statements in your T4 through the API server of this model provider, right?
I hadn't thought of that, but when you say it, I wouldn't. Like, you know, I hear a lot of people using OpenAI, Anthropic, stuff like that for like budgeting and financial advice and stuff like that. And really the only way you could get decent financial advice is upload your financial information. And I don't know, like, it makes for good news articles and stories and stuff like that, but I would have a real problem providing that type of information to a model.
Yeah. And that's like one of the things that makes me a little skeptical about how easy it's going to be to roll out this kind of like sweeping workforce change stuff and why we haven't seen it just like explode yet. Yeah. There's got to be millions of these little niche rule cases, like legally, that you can't get around.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. I think it's kind of going to be like internet banking, right? Imagine when internet banking first came out, right? Nobody probably used it. They're like, well, yeah, you first. And I guess like after a while, it just became second nature and you don't even think about it now. So I would suspect...
convenience just took over.
Convenience,
right?
Yeah. But I would suspect it's going to take a long time before we get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next? We were talking about my browser doing some stuff for me tonight. And the next article is about AI browsers. that can be lulled into a dream world where guardrails no longer apply. I love this. So, okay, the first thing I wrote down, are you using any AI-enabled browsers?
No, nothing like specifically designed for AI.
Yeah, me neither. No,
I have the impeccable extension installed in like a Chrome, in my Chrome setup, but I don't use Chrome. So
okay, yeah, I downloaded something called Aside, which I don't think is a full AI browser. It was suggested by somebody in one of the Discord channels that I hang around in. It's nice. It looks pretty and everything, but I installed it and opened up a couple websites, and never attached it to my Anthropic account or anything like that. And, you know, to me, browsers are very much like IDEs. You get so used to the ones that you like. It's fantastic that everybody has their own browser now, but the likelihood of somebody just changing, I think, is not very high. But
well, it's a hideously complicated piece of software to write to and write well, right? Like Firefox is millions of lines of code. So so is Chrome, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I could only imagine. So basically what they do here is it's kind of like jailbreaking an agent, right? So what they basically do is, if I'm understanding the article correctly, is they essentially try to get the agent to believe something that isn't true. So 1 + 1 is not 2, it's 3. And if you can get the agent believing that, then you are essentially brainwashing that agent, and then you could potentially get it to do something that it otherwise wouldn't do. And I love the name for this thing. It's called BioShock, which is one of the best video games ever. And in BioShock, if you remember, you're essentially brainwashed, right? Or you're not brainwashed, but the characters in the game have been brainwashed, and you're trying to break that. So I thought it was fitting that they're essentially trying to brainwash your browser to believing something that isn't true, so it would then do something that it normally wouldn't do. And I guess the real dangerous part of this is that browser is on your laptop, and it has access to all of your files and everything else. And if they can get it to start doing something that it normally wouldn't do, things could be bad.
Well, even just your cookies for signing into whatever, right? If you happen to have something open that it can exploit, it'll pull the whole list of things you have saved on your browser, right? So
yep. Maybe even get your passwords and stuff like that out of your password manager. Yep. Who knows, right?
Your auth tokens. Yeah. Anything.
Yeah.
If you're signed in. It's really funny that you can hypnotize a browser into behaving badly by showing it a web game, essentially.
Yeah, is what they did, right? What was the other little, they had another little quote in the article, victory is defeat or something like that. So they're basically just telling it garbage and trying to convince it that the opposite is true, right? So I got a good chuckle out of that one.
Just giving it a logical paradox and hoping it breaks. That's funny.
I think the takeaway is just stick with a regular browser for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. the next one was a Microsoft AI announcement that you had shared. Why don't you walk us through this one?
Oh, yeah. So Microsoft is kind of back on the map in terms of foundational LLMs or foundation models. They released something called MAI. What was it called?
Thinking One.
I'll pull it up here. Thinking One, which is there. And I mean, in terms of performance, it's not top tier by any means. But what's really interesting about it is they released the paper with it for the entire training process for creating the thing. So it's kind of one of the best views we've had into the whole process for training one of these systems, which I thought was pretty cool. But kind of interesting that Microsoft is now, I guess maybe after that kind of distancing with OpenAI, they're kind of getting back into the foundation model game, which is somewhat interesting.
Yeah, that's what I wrote down as notes too. Interesting in the sense that figure how much money Microsoft has invested in sort of the big AI players, and now they come out with their own model, which, you know what, I guess we really shouldn't be surprised. Amazon has invested a lot of money. They have their own models, from the Nova models and stuff like that. So yeah, it's funny. It just sort of came out of the blue. The other thing that I thought was really interesting there is sort of the safety versus helpfulness sort of path they seem to be taking. I've never seen one of those graphs at the bottom where they were like, hey, this is how Sonnet does versus us on sort of like self-harm, on sexualized content and stuff like that. And they were kind of ranking themselves against that model on those different categories. I've never seen anything like that before from any of the other AI models or AI companies out there. Maybe I've just never noticed it, but I thought that was unique.
It's cool to see. I mean, especially amongst all the different content moderation categories, which is like kind of what you would expect this would be used for, with those kind of like, I guess that's what they're benchmarking there. How good is this thing at parsing and identifying a piece of bad content? So maybe that's where they're trying to differentiate on this. It's like, it's relatively competitive in some areas. Like it's 97% on AMI, for example, on the benchmarks. It's like 50% on SWE bench. So
yeah, I bet you won't see it in Bedrock.
Probably not. I would be very surprised.
Wow. That would be something you wouldn't expect. We'll give it what the normal turnaround time is 4 or 5 days. So, you know, by the next episode, it should be on Bedrock, right? Yeah.
You would think.
Yeah, you'd think. If history is an indicator of future. So, I think it's really interesting, and let's see where it goes.
Yeah.
They're making more announcements than Google, so that must mean something.
That's true. That's true. I haven't heard anything new. What was the last thing Google released? Was it Gemini 3.5 Flash?
I don't even know. I think
Who
so.
Who knows?
Remember, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, right? It was like nothing.
Yeah.
Boom, look at all this stuff. And then it's nothing again. It's just gone. I don't know. Who knows? You also shared an update on Bun. Why don't you walk us through that one too?
Oh, this was really interesting. So I don't know if you remember, we talked about this a little bit, but are you familiar with Bun at all?
I know the name probably just because we've talked about it on the show, but I've never used it, never really, dove into it in any detail.
Okay. So basically it's a runtime for JavaScript plus a bunch of other features for bundling and running your JavaScript applications more efficiently, right? And hosting them. So what happened was maybe in May, like May 11th, I think, the owner of that project essentially said, I'm going to just see if I can use Fable to convert this 500,000 line of code Zig project into a Rust project, because they were having all of these memory leak problems, all these use after freeze. They were constantly running into issues with Zig. And also this was just after Anthropic bought them, I believe.
Yeah.
But essentially what happened was after, I think it was like 64 concurrent agents running over like 11 days, they were able to port it in parallel. They were able to port the Zig code to Rust. Wow. The interesting part is like how they accomplished it, right? So it's not like a one prompt and done situation. There's a lot of really good lessons here about designing or going through and ironing out the spec that you want or the rules of engagement for this project, right? What are the porting requirements, the docs? What compiler errors are you trying to solve? Like, what is the test suite you're going to use? And thankfully, their test suite was in TypeScript, so it was like a separate language entirely. Mm-hmm. So they could just essentially run all these agents in parallel across the code base with these well-defined rules and also a, an oppositional review agent. They had like two oppositional review agents per process running, per agent running on this code. So it, I guess the interesting part is with that oppositional review, you can have like a really solid, reliable code generation parallelized project, so you're able to port these huge code bases now from one language to another if your language is not suiting your needs.
Yeah, that's impressive. It just again shows the capability of the models getting better and better, right? Because didn't Anthropic a while ago try to create like an operating system or something, remember, and it failed miserably?
It was a C compiler. That's it. From scratch. Right?
Yeah. So obviously we're not comparing apples to apples here, but to have it fail on one task, but now being able to port from one language to the other, I think goes back to what we say here all the time. I quote that Ethan Mollick book all the time, right? This is the worst model you'll ever see. So maybe it's, again, just demonstrating the capabilities of these models continually improving over time, right? So yeah, really interesting.
It's like the methodology. It's like the methodology too, right? Like you have that oppositional kind of review set up, which we didn't necessarily have before. And because they ironed out exactly how they wanted this code ported to Rust, it was relatively straightforward to port it over with functionality intact. Like basically it wasn't like, there's a lot of idiosyncrasies in Rust code where you can have Rust idiomatic code, and then you can also have unsafe code, which is kind of running like or you can write code that isn't monitored by the borrow checker as much, for example. Okay. So they called it unsafe blocks. It kind of works like C. So essentially they just ported all of the unsafe code in Zig to the Rust version, and then afterwards they went through and kind of refined it down into proper Rust code, or that's what they're working on now.
Yeah.
But it cost $165,000 to do it, to generate 1 million lines of Rust code.
Gives you a benchmark for future, right? Because somebody else is going to try this later on with something else and be able to say, it cost us $105,000. So it's coming down in price too. So it's interesting for a number of reasons, right?
Yeah. If you think about it, like this is a huge rewrite that would totally blow up most projects, right? Like a lot of projects don't survive a rewrite like this. And if you can do it in 11 days for $165,000, you would have needed a team of like three or four engineers to do this before. And it would have taken like a year plus probably.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So from that perspective,
it cost you more than $165,000.
Yeah. Easily.
And if you were actually able to complete it successfully. So you invest all that money and maybe you don't even get anything out of it in the end. Yeah.
Yeah. You could easily just tank your project, right? Like,
yeah. You know, the other interesting thing I heard you say there, and I hope I'm not misinterpreting, but you were saying about like how, you know, giving the agents very specific instructions and enough information. It's funny. And again, you know, the stuff that I see all the time is, your skills have to be like, should be two lines. Your Claude MD should be like no more than 50K and stuff. And I'm actually finding in what I'm working on, like that retro skill and stuff like that, I don't know if I'm doing myself a disservice long run, but I'm seeing like my global Claude file, my global Claude MD, my project Claude MD, my memory files, not dramatically increasing in size, but increasing in size as it learns more and more about my projects or more and more about how it needs to access my environments and stuff. So my Claude files and stuff like that are getting big, but you know, I'm not seeing sort of the downside that you hear about all the time, you know, burning through a whole bunch of tokens, slowing it down. The larger your files, the less quality you get out of it. I'm not noticing that. And I don't know if I'm maybe just inferring something on the way you were explaining that story or not, but I don't know what you're experiencing. Are your files getting bigger or smaller? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Mm. Yeah. Like if there's bloat in the Claude MD files, or there's like context bloat in your per repo setup.
Yeah.
I have noticed that a little bit. I try to pare it down whenever I see it, just to what's actually necessary. I find a good way to deal with that, especially with skills, is like hierarchical skills, right? That you call on demand. So if I have like an entry skill for a specific thing, mm-hmm. and then it'll have sub skills and tools listed in there that it can go off and call if it needs them.
Yeah. Okay.
It's kind of funny though. It's like one of the things from this translation project, it's like one of the rules he set was like, if you have to explain why you're doing this thing or do it working around this thing and it's more than a paragraph, don't do it. Veto it. if you're trying to just like, this is something he told or he put in his config, was like, if you are trying to justify this thing and you're spending more than a paragraph on it, don't do it. I guess that catches like loops where it's like, okay, maybe this, and then maybe I should do that, and I should rationalize it this way, kind of thing.
Stops it from getting in that
loop. Just kind of a funny. Yeah, like don't don't go out of the bounds that we're setting for this conversion work, basically.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, what do we got? What's left? Oh, we got one more. I thought this was really neat. It was from MIT Technology Review, and OpenAI built what they call GPT Red. And it is essentially, they describe it as a sparring partner that they've developed to help improve their own models. So essentially, it's automating the human-led red teaming for all their models. And it sounds like it's quite effective, and it's been sort of learning new ways to come up with exploits that humans hadn't thought of. So yeah, interesting slash maybe slightly scary. I don't know.
We're so screwed with CyberSec in the next few years.
Oh yeah.
It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there were like two Linux kernel exploits last week came out.
Didn't I also read an article that, like, I think it was a Microsoft related article, something about Microsoft releasing the most patch fixes ever. So you gotta think they're using some sort of tooling to help them identify that stuff, right?
Must
like
be.
Like if it's gotta be. Like, why wouldn't you have fixed those things before if you knew they were there? So,
well, Windows is such a beast though.
Oh yeah, I could imagine.
Windows is an absolute monolith of a system, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like they have legacy code from like 95 in there, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
That they have to deal with.
Probably. The interesting thing that I wrote here is like developing new types of attacks. It was able to inject fake chain of thoughts in other models to basically, well, very similar. We were talking about the browsers, right? Where you're just trying to make it believe something that isn't true. So this GPT Red was able to basically inject those fake thoughts into the other models.
Crazy.
Yep.
It manipulated a vending machine agent. It made something expensive cost 50 cents.
Yep. The other thing it said was that they found most times, or actually maybe I wrote this down wrong, so I better be careful. They spent a lot of time on prompt injection. Just seeing if you can break it out.
I mean,
it
makes sense for them.
Yeah, right. The other thing that I wrote down here was they also sort of created they called it a self-play loop, where it was just like testing ideas against other models, trying it out, learning from it, trying this. And the models were kind of working back and forth with each other on sort of, it was trying to break it. The other things were trying to improve themselves. So it was able to kind of,
they did AlphaGo.
Yeah. Like sort of like self-learning loop almost. Right. And the other thing they mentioned is it's very persistent, unlike a human, right? It's going to keep working away on something until it finds it, versus a human probably just loses interest after a while and moves on to the next thing, right?
That's one thing I've noticed about 5.6, actually, is it's much more persistent than 5.5.
Oh, yeah?
Like, 5.5 had a tendency to kind of give up after one or two items, and you'd have to push it.
Yeah.
But 5.6 will latch on. This is so funny. That's exactly how they trained the Go, like the superhuman Go model.
Yeah.
For the game Go, is that kind of adversarial self play loop. Yeah. So they did it for CyberSec.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, like you said, I think eventually we're pretty screwed when it comes to cyber security. I was smiling there when you said that 5.6 is a little more persistent. If Claude asks me one more time that if I want to wrap up, I'm gonna lose my shit.
No.
I will tell you when we're done. Like, just keep going. That's what I pay you for, man.
I decide when the session ends.
Yeah. When I can't keep my eyes open, we will finish. But until then, and even then, I will task you with one more thing before I go to bed. All right. So that wraps the show up. Do you have any recommendations for the week?
Oh, recommendations.
I caught you off guard. You forgot about recommendations.
You did.
Why don't I go first and see if you can, if you jog your memory.
Yeah.
Okay. So I spent too much money on Steam sale, in summer Steam sale.
Oh, yeah.
Don't tell me what I, or don't ask me what I bought, because I don't really remember. So, you know, I absolutely had to have it. And then ironically, I got another game after the Steam sale ended, and it's called The Alters. Have you heard of this?
The Alters? No, I've not heard of this.
It's like a kind of a role-playing sci-fi space thing. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't want to give any of it away. Unique and very, very cool. So I picked it up after the Steam sale. And if you're into the kind of like, it sort of reminds me, remember the Mass Effect style game, maybe Cyberpunk, where like you're kind of in a situation, you're talking to NPCs and sort of deciding on how you want to play things and stuff like that. Kind of that idea of role playing. Very cool. And the concept is really, really, I've never seen anything like it before. It's very cool. So if you're looking for a game to play, pretty neat. The other one that I have, I should have loaded up Letterboxd before I started this so I could tell you about movies, because I've watched a lot of movies, but I don't remember those either. I found another, I'm going to call it a fork of Ghostie, called Herder. Have you heard of this?
Oh, no, I've not.
So if you think of CMUX, it's spelt, I think it's spelt H-E-R-D-R. So that, you know, just drop a value of because you can. So you know how CMUX is kind of a fork of Ghostie as well, in the sense you've got the tabs down the side. This is identical to that, but it's a little more lightweight, in the sense that the tabs down the side are just very CLI feely. You don't have that kind of menu overlay that you see on the side of CMUX. So I would call it a little more lightweight. The other thing that really caught my eye was it has like built-in scheduling, kind of. So remember I was saying it took me a couple days to figure out that open brain issue. I was doing that in Herder as a way to try it out. And it would basically be like, okay, I've made these changes. It's going to run overnight. I'll check it in the morning. Now, it didn't work perfectly, because I don't give it, it doesn't have an IAM user, right? It's still going through SSO. So its sessions expire and I have to give it permission to start that next session. So it got a little grumpy with me after day three that I can't do my job because, you know, every morning the session's expired, but it's essentially setting cron for itself. To follow up or do tasks if it needs to do them in the future. You know, if you're looking to add yet another CLI tool to poke around on, I think it's pretty cool.
Okay, I'll check it out. I'll see if it replaces TMUX for me at all. I've pretty much been exclusively doing everything through TMUX since this started. So
I was using a lot of Ghostie, and then you know, with pains and stuff like that. So I guess TMUX like, you know, jumping between pains and stuff like that. And then somebody suggested CMUX. Yeah, close enough. Suggested TMUX, and CMUX. I went over there, and then, you know, there's a lot of these tools coming out. So I just keep kind of jumping around between them and just trying them out. So if you're looking for something new to try, might be worth it.
Nice.
Yeah. Did I give you any time to think of a recommendation?
Desperately tried to remember what we watched last week. We watched Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
The movie with where the aliens show up and whatnot, with Jack Nicholson. And well, it's a star-studded cast.
But. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's an old one, isn't it? That's like 90s?
Yeah. Jack 90s. Jack Black is like in his 20s maybe in that movie, I think.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. Yeah. It's been a while. You made me think of something that you got to put on your radar. It's called Slothisker or something like that. Have you heard of this?
Slothisker? No.
Floss.
How do you spell that? Sloth.
Well, I think it's like sloth and massacre jammed together.
Slothisker. Oh my god.
Something like that.
I think we might have watched this. Okay. One. Is it a killer sloth?
Yeah, it's a killer sloth, man.
Okay. Yeah, we definitely
in like a sorority house, of course.
Slotherhouse. It's Slotherhouse. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Oh my god. As soon as we watched it, the wife was like, "You got to tell Travers about that movie." And we started talking about him. Like, oh wait. And there was something else with Jack Black in it just recently. You want to watch a really bad movie based on a video game. It's got Jamie Lee Curtis. It's got Jack Black in it as the robot. It's before we wrap up, Jamie Lee Curtis.
This is
Borderlands.
This is Borderlands. Yep. Yeah.
So bad.
I heard that was terrible.
So bad. It's so
that's
bad.
A watch, I think.
No. It's. I don't think it is. I think it's so bad that you have to watch it just so you can be like,
okay,
oh my god, how did they get so many really good actors in a really shit movie?
And the budget was not bad for that movie.
No.
I think, right? Like, it was a
they had to have spent some bucks on that. Like, the production quality is good, and there's good CGI and everything. So they spent some money on that thing. They had to lose a lot of cash, a lot of cash. So
it's too bad because the games are good.
The games were fun,
kind
man.
Of a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they tried to borrow. Or tried to stay with that idea of just how much fun and crazy those video games were. I think they tried to do that in movie form, and it just, you're just like,
just doesn't land.
Yeah. If you can watch it for free, you should watch it for free so that you can sit there after and go, how do I get my 2 hours back? Like, it's that bad.
Do a little introspection, wonder how you got there, ask what happened.
Yeah. Who talked me into watching this again? I have to have a word with that person. I want my money back. Yeah, that's awesome. And anything else on your recommendation list since I interrupted you with bad movies?
I guess I could recommend the Pokemon trading card game. Pretty fun.
Okay. There you go. Yeah.
Ghoulies. We watched Ghoulies. That's what Ghoulies. I was trying to remember.
Oh, okay.
Have you heard of that one?
I think I have, but give me like the 2-sentence synopsis. What is it?
So a cult leader is doing a ritual to summon something or some sort of demon or whatnot, but the ritual gets stopped for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. Anyways, fast forward 20 years, his son inherits the house where the ritual is happening, discovers all his old black magic paraphernalia, starts to summon little puppet creatures around the house and goes mad with power, basically.
Excellent.
And it was pretty fun.
It was good. Okay. I'll put that on my watch list.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of like little critter movies, like Critters in particular.
Yeah.
So that's right. It fits the bill.
When you said Ghoulies, my older brain, as you can evidence from how much gray is in my beard, immediately thinks Goonies.
Oh yeah.
Which,
that's a classic.
It's a classic movie, right?
Much, much better movie than Ghoulies. I'll say that much.
Yeah, so good.
But
so good.
Goonies doesn't have little puppet freaks in it. So
no, it does not. No, but it has. I can't remember the character's name. The little guy that invents all the different gadgets. He's got like the punching belt, and he comes to their house via the zip line and stuff.
He's a shortstop from Indiana
Jones,
right? Yeah,
Shortstack.
It's that guy, Shortstack.
Yeah.
Oh, what is
his
name?
You can totally see him.
I think they call him Data in that movie for
some
reason.
Data, yeah, they do. You're right. Good memory. Good memory. Yeah, wow. Awesome. All right, man. Well, that's another episode in the books.
52.
Jeez. All right, well, we'll see everybody back next week for episode 53. And you know what it means now. Cool outro music. We'll see everybody next week.
Software used to cost $1 million.